Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, December 3rd, 2015. The ruling SPLM party prepares to beat the January deadline for political parties to register in South Sudan.
This convention is important for us because by all the agreements, including the Arusha and also the political parties charter, we are supposed to register in January. And therefore, if we don't do this, it means that SPLM will not be registered.
And a UN expert speaks about the effects of sanctions on the people of Sudan.
People die more from cancer because the General Electric machines that are operating are now in disrepair and they can't get the spare parts.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's ruling SPLM party says it will hold a convention this week to discuss the party's constitution and other regulations. Party officials say the meeting must be held this month before the January deadline for all parties in South Sudan to register. Mungome Devs Rakarinj has the story for VOA from Juba.
SPLM spokesperson Bol Makweng told reporters in Juba this afternoon that the convention will be held on December 12th.
I'm passing this information to the members of the SPLM and the public at large, both in the country and in diaspora. The agenda of the conference would be to pass the basic documents, the constitution, manifesto, rules and regulations.
Over the years, party members have always asked that a party convention be held so that they can restructure the party. In December 2013, the SPLM organized the National Liberation Council, the ruling arm of the party. Disagreements in the council quickly escalated and sparked the current conflict. Shortly after that convention, President Salva Kiir accused his former vice president, Riek Machar, of attempting a coup against him and his government. Accusations Machar denied. Makweng, who also serves as the SPLM's Secretary for Youth, Culture and Communication, says the ruling party has not held a general convention since 2008. Makweng says party officials are working to dispatch invitation letters to all party members. He says both lawmakers in the SPLM government and the SPLM in opposition members will be invited to the meeting.
We have had an Arusha declaration. It was an agreement between all the factions who were there. So the invitation is to those who will attend this conference, and they are the members of the 2008 convention. Those who were there are those who would be invited to attend.
During talks mediated by Tanzania's ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi or CCM party in Arusha, the three factions of the SPLM, the SPLM in government, SPLM IO, and the former detainees agreed to reinstate SPLM members to their original positions according to the 2008 convention. Under the Arusha Accord, all SPLM factions agreed to unite. Makweng believes the opposition is expected to arrive in the country within days.
This convention is important for us because by all the agreements, including the Arusha and also the political parties charter, we are supposed to register in January. And therefore, if we don't do this, it means that SPLM will not be registered. So those who are willing and are committed to the SPLM values and principles will have to carry on and register the SPLM as a political party.
The National Convention is considered the SPLM's most important meeting of the party hierarchy. Makweng stressed that he is confident members of the SPLM in opposition will attend the party convention. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinj in Juba.
The UN Security Council reaffirmed its readiness yesterday to take measures against what it calls spoilers to the peace process in South Sudan and those who abuse civilians and attack peacekeepers. For more on this development, we go live to VOA's United Nations correspondent Margaret Bashir, who is at the UN headquarters in New York. Good morning, Margaret.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Please, bring us up to speed on what the Security Council decided yesterday at a meeting in New York?
Well, they had their regular meeting on South Sudan on the situation, and they discussed the mandate, which needs to be renewed by December 15th. And, you know, with the fighting that's been going on for the past 2 years, UNMISS, the mission there, hasn't been able to do a lot of what it was originally there for, which was capacity building. They had to move more towards protecting civilians. So one of the things the council is discussing now among itself is whether to add this capacity building feature back in, what tasks the mission should have going forward. And they must decide this by the 15th of December.
And it sounded like the UN Security Council was talking tough. Has the Security Council ever sanctioned any of the commanders from the two warring parties in South Sudan's conflict?
Yes, in July they did sanction three commanders from the government army, and three from the SPLA in opposition. And they did try to sanction, including Peter Gadet in July, by the way. And they did try in September to bring some more sanctions actions against the army chief, Paul Matong, and the rebel general, Johnson Olani. But Russia and Angola, who are council members, sort of blocked that designation. But I think if we keep seeing violations of the peace agreement, that they might reconsider their position.
And why is the Security Council talking tough now that the two parties are ready to implement the agreement?
Well, are they ready to implement the agreement? We've heard that so many times before in South Sudan, and we've had at least maybe seven violations of previous ceasefires that I can count, and we've seen violations throughout since August, especially in Unity State. It's really very dire there. So I think they're very concerned that what happened, you know, the agreement that was reached in August could completely unravel. And they don't want that to happen.
This is not the first time the Security Council has warned South Sudan's warring parties to implement the peace deal. What is the feeling among individual members of the council when they discuss the conflict in South Sudan?
Well, I think it's frustration. I think it's absolute frustration because the international community and the Security Council really worked for South Sudan to become an independent country, and they really are very disappointed to see that this rivalry between President Kiir and Mr. Machar has just, you know, degenerated and thrown the country into this crisis. And, you know, they thought of it as a success story, that South Sudan was going to be a success story. And they're very disappointed in the leaders. And they have, you know, really insisted that they show more political will, more commitment to the process, and that they not let their people down.
Margaret, thank you very much for that report. That's VOA's United Nations correspondent Margaret Bashir, reporting from the UN headquarters in New York. United Nations expert says Sudan has been under unilateral sanctions for the past two decades and believes it's time to consider adjusting those sanctions. The UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights and International Sanctions is calling on the United States and the rest of the international community to revisit the sanctions. Ayen Bior has this story from Washington.
UN Special Rapporteur Idris Jazairi recently returned from a week-long visit to Sudan. He says every day, ordinary people in Sudan suffer from the international sanctions imposed on their country. Jazairi says the sanctions have all kinds of unintended consequences.
Sudan is one of the only countries where people die from diabetes because they can't get the drug to address it. People die more from cancer because the General Electric machines that are operating are now in disrepair and they can't get the spare parts. The buses, the mini buses in the city of Khartoum, which is a transport for ordinary people, in 1997 there were about 43,000 such buses, and now there are only 12,000 left, and the poor people have to trek on their feet in the dust to go across this huge city.
Under the sanctions, countries cannot import any Sudanese goods or services. Also, countries are prohibited from granting or extending credits or loans by a U.S. person to the government of Sudan. Although exceptions have been made to allow medicine, hospital equipment, and other life-saving aid into Sudan, Jazairi says most banks and businesses around the world exercise an overabundance of caution when it comes to doing business in Sudan because they don't want to be on the wrong side of the law.
The system of transfers has been completely paralyzed by the this overreaction of the banking sector in Western Europe to the situation, to the sanctions applied, to the penalties applied by the Treasury.
Jazari suggests holding a meeting between Sudanese authorities, the IMF, and UN agencies to iron out how to comply with U.S. policy without stepping over their legal parameters. Jazari admits that there have been some progress regarding Sudan. In October, the Financial Action Task Force, an international body that sets standards for anti-money laundering and combating terrorism financing, removed Sudan from their watch list. The task force said Sudan has made significant progress in addressing deficiencies in their anti-money laundering legal frameworks. Jazari says that decision should encourage the international community to revisit Sudanese sanctions.
Therefore, if they feel more confident about the financial management in the Sudan, then that might be a good reason to see if we can give some greater flexibility to transfers which permit life-saving drugs and spare parts to be introduced with more flexibility.
We reached out to the Office of U.S. Special Envoy on Sudan and South Sudan, Donald Booth, for comment. We have not heard back. A comprehensive report on Jazari's visit to Sudan will be presented to the UN Human Rights Council in September 2016. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
A South Sudanese nonprofit called Capital Movie says it wants to use technology to promote peace and bring development to local communities. Capital Movie this week organized a workshop dubbed South Sudan Peace Hack Camp in Juba. Santino Monud Ayuel reports for VOA from the capital.
More than 100 people from South Sudan and other African countries took part in a three-day workshop. Lagos Stephen, executive director of Capital Movie, asked participants to spread message of peace in their localities through internet.
Now that they have known how to use social media platform, they should use it specifically and exclusively to really unite the people of South Sudan, to really create the peace that this country needs. And this has been really the theme of the South Sudan Peace Camp, is that we need to hack into peace.
Lual Mashkil Mayan, a South Sudanese computer engineer who attended the workshop, says he is working to code programs which can be used to foster peace in the country. He believes it is possible to restore peace in South Sudan by using locally created information and communication technology programs.
There are so many ways of spreading it. One, we are going to put it on the Google app. That is where everyone can access the app, then download it. Second to that, we may use the mobile operators like Zain or MTN or Bibasil to send the link to everyone who is having a smartphone so they can be able to get the app.
Participants from other countries who have used ICT to promote peace and overcome other problems say South Sudanese can do the same. Said Hamza, a Tanzanian who participated in the workshop, says his group, known as Sauti ya Wakulima in Kiswahili, or Voices of Farmers, use ICT to promote agriculture and provide farmers with useful information. Hamza says his group started by sharing messages about agricultural innovations through mobile phones and later on the web. He encourages all Sudanese farmers to do the same thing.
The farmer experiences not only struggle because of insufficient infrastructure, but they are also facing the challenge of changing local climate, less rain, less underground water. However, they know that by sharing their knowledge on how to cope with these problems, they can become stronger.
Catholic University of South Sudan agriculture student William Deng says he thinks it is time for all South Sudanese, including farmers, to embrace ICT to help them solve problems in their day-to-day work.
Our people here are still too much behind in terms of how to apply technology in agriculture. Like, for example, when you might have grown your crops in the farm fields and the crops have been affected much by the parasites, especially the pests and other diseases.
17-year-old Vior Ajang, who studies computer science in Juba, says he believes the internet can help promote peace if used correctly. Ajahn says too many South Sudanese misuse the internet as a platform to engage in hate speech. He advises young people to use social media to encourage economic development and to promote peace.
This is the right time because there's no one who will come from America. Okay, they will come, but they will not do the best way we want it to be. So it's only you and me who can bring peace to us.
Some participants at the workshop were skeptical about how successful using internet can be in a country where most people do not know how to read and write. They believe the South Sudan's extremely low literacy rate, along with its poor internet access, will hinder the Capital Movie Initiative. The workshop was sponsored by USAID, the German government, and Internews. Another ECAM is being planned for next year. For BOA News, I'm Ayua Santino Manute in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, African diaspora speak about refugee issues. That story when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Do you have a talent that would be considered unusual?
My talent, I'm a very good traditional dancer. This is both Madi and Acholi.
Business, unusual because it is being operated as young as I am, so very proud of it.
No, I don't have any talent that I consider unusual.
Sometimes I seem to be creative, yeah, because I like creativity, like designs, I can make up designs.
I don't have any talent whereby people, maybe they can get amazed of me. Is Sheba doing like that? Like, I don't have any.
I like talking a lot. Maybe it's not something that you could call a talent, but for me, I feel it's a talent that is unusual. I talk a lot sometimes. I really talk a lot.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening on South Sudan in Focus. The United States says it will significantly increase the number of accepted refugees from around the world over the next couple of years. While the focus has been on Syrian refugees, members of the African diaspora in the United States hopes African refugees will also benefit from the pledge. But there is one problem that keeps Africans in U.S. from speaking as one voice. Elizabeth Lee reports from Los Angeles.
On the edge of downtown Los Angeles, a group of people, mainly from the Democratic Republic of Congo, gather at the African First Community Church of Southern California once a week for a little piece of home. About one-third of them arrived in the U.S. as refugees. Camille Tutu, founder of Africa New Day, says applying to the U.S. under refugee status is not an easy process.
Sometimes it's very difficult and it's a very long process. And we never know when you start the process, when it's going to actually end up in, the person actually coming to the States.
On this Sunday, Tutu talks to the congregation the work he's been doing to help the Congolese people back home in a country plagued by war and violence.
There are militia groups all over the eastern part of Congo. But again, when I say militia, people don't understand. Let me say there are ISIS all over, and then people will understand. If I say there are Al-Qaeda and Taliban all over, then people will understand. But this has been going on for the past 25 years.
Tutu's homeland is not the only African country in turmoil, says the church's pastor, Kasirika Kasomo.
The whole country is in, continent, I wanted to say, is in big turmoil. So when we are seeing Africans really running for their lives, I don't know why many times the international community closes its eye.
The victims are those who are, who are regular people. You know, they can't work in their country. They have been jailed. They have been tortured.
Ethiopian native Saba Maskal has been a persistent voice for African refugees. She's been helping them navigate life in the U.S. for almost 35 years.
I advocate that African refugees should be given an opportunity to come to the United States.
In 2015, about one-third of all refugees who arrive in the U.S. came from Africa. Talk show host and magazine editor Pamela Anchang, who's originally from Cameroon, hopes more Africans will be able to come as the U.S. increases the numbers of accepted refugees over the next few years.
People are getting killed, getting slaughtered. Even in my own country, in the north, Boko Haram has infiltrated and has caused a lot of havoc. But it just seems to be that the emphasis is more on the European crisis and the Africans are feeling neglected. So I think we as Africans ought to speak up.
Anchang hopes the plight of African refugees will get more attention through her TV shows and magazine about immigrants and the African diaspora. But she says it is not easy for the African diaspora to speak as one voice.
Africans are very tribal in their thinking. We're very regional in our thinking. And so, you know, we've been so divided and conquered back home. So Africans typically don't see themselves in a homogeneous way.
Anchang says in the U.S., it is best to work with one voice, the voice of an African. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
South Africa's top appeals court has overturned a lesser judgment and convicted superstar athlete Oscar Pistorius of murder, agreeing with prosecutors who say he meant to kill when he shot dead his girlfriend. VOA's Anita Paul reports from Johannesburg.
Before he began his lengthy remarks, South African Judge of Appeal Eric Leach described the case as a human tragedy of Shakespearean proportions. No less dramatic was his final ruling nearly an hour later. In calm, detailed language, he methodically dismantled Judge Tokozile Masipa's original ruling and concluded on behalf of the five-judge panel that Pistorius should have been convicted of murder for his actions that led to the death of his girlfriend on Valentine's Day 2013.
The accused's conviction and sentence on count one are set aside and replaced with the following. Guilty of murder, with the accused having had criminal intent in the form of dolus eventualis. 3. The matter is referred back to the trial court to consider an appropriate sentence afresh in the light of the comments in this judgment.
Pistorius claims he mistook his girlfriend, Reva Steenkamp, for an intruder when he shot 4 times through a locked bathroom door at his Pretoria home, killing her. Prosecutors argued that he meant to kill Steenkamp. Leach says the judges concluded with no doubt that Pistorius foresaw that the person behind the door would die after he pumped 4 bullets into it. This signals what may be the final chapter in a trial that was closely watched around the world. Pistorius' conviction of the lesser charge of culpable homicide, equivalent to the U.S. charge of manslaughter, was largely met with outrage in South Africa. That lesser charge earned him a 5-year sentence. He was released on parole on October 19th after a year of time served. Now he will return to court and receive a new sentence. Pistorius, who was under house arrest as part of his parole conditions, did not attend the ruling Thursday. But Steenkamp's mother, June, who has been a constant presence since the trial began, did. The family has long maintained that the original conviction and sentence were too light. As Leach made his pronouncement, she sat in the front row of the Bloemfontein court, her face unreadable. Anita Paul, VOA News, Johannesburg.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. South Sudan's ruling SPLM party says it will hold a convention late next week to discuss the constitution and party documents. One top party official says the meeting must be held this month in order to beat the January deadline for registration of all South Sudanese political parties. SPLM spokesperson Bo McQuing says the convention will be held on December 12th. The agenda includes passing the constitution, basic documents, and rules and regulations. Over the past few years, party members have always asked that a party convention be held so that members can restructure the party, among other things. In December of 2013, the SPLM organized the National Liberation Council, the ruling arm of the party. Disagreements in the council quickly arose, sparking the 20-month-long conflict. Shortly afterward, President Salva Kiir accused his former vice president, Riek Machar, of attempting to stage a coup against him and his government, accusations that Machar immediately denied. McQuaing says party officials are working to dispatch invitation letters to all party members to attend the convention. The UN Security Council reaffirmed its readiness today to take action against spoilers to the peace process in South Sudan and against those who abuse civilians and attack peacekeepers. The U.S. ambassador to the UN, Samantha Power, who heads the council this month, says that they discussed the need for all parties to the conflict to participate with full commitment to the ceasefire and the peace process and to form the transitional government, which is now overdue. Speaking in her national capacity, Power said both government and opposition must demonstrate more commitment and more political will to ensure the deal does not unravel. The UN peacekeeping chief told the council the South Sudan peace process is at a critical juncture. He said progress implementing the August 26th peace plan has been slow and has been hampered by serious difficulties, noting repeated violations of the ceasefire agreement by both sides, particularly in Unity State. And finally, a United Nations expert says Sudan has been under unilateral sanctions for the past 2 decades and believes it is now time to consider adjusting those sanctions. The UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights and International Sanctions is calling on the United States, as well as the rest of the international community, to revisit the sanctions. UN Special Rapporteur Idriss Jazeer, who last week just returned from a visit to Sudan, says every day ordinary people in Sudan suffer from the international sanctions imposed on their country. He says they undermine their basic human rights on Sudanese all over the world. For example, Jazeer says it is very difficult for the Sudanese diaspora to send money to their loved ones back home. He says the sanctions have all kinds of unintended consequences on the Sudanese people. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song New Sudan by Musa Juma.
Milambo eh abana personalities southern region
karango tio matek sana kafrika simeo kedo malich sana kafrika elijo kedo matek sana kafrika acholi konda sande kinupi shiluku konda madigiti kalu Nyalita Joseph Lako, General Joseph Lako.
We have been listening to Musa Juma with that song about New Sudan. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.